Lindor 1-for-3 in his career against Hudson. And he hits one deep to right center field toward the pavilion. That ball is out of here! Francisco Lindor with his second home run of the year. His first as a left-hand batter. A two-run shot and the Mets go right back in front. 6-4. He's been waiting for that for the last 3 weeks since the bell rang. Lindor finally got his best swing from the left side and put one in orbit to put the Mets back in front. Marte unloads one to center field. Outland back to the warning track at the wall. It's out of here! Starling Marte with a three-run homer to greet Ryan Brazier. And the Mets go back in front. It's 5-2 New York. A four-RBI day for Marte, his fourth home run of the year. And the Mets now have a 3-1 lead in the sixth. Second pitch thrown by Ryan Brazier, and Marte made no mistake. Bases loaded, two out. And he pulls one on the ground. Alonzo sprawls to get it. Smith late covering, and Alonzo dives and makes the play himself. Alonzo picking up for Drew Smith, who did not get over, and makes the diving play to beat Muncy to the bag after making the sprawling stop to keep the Mets in front.
More on that one, though. Maybe the slider's coming.
2-2. He struck him out. Edwin Diaz puts the... Reed Garrett, 39 minor league saves. He had two pitching for the Cebu Lions in Japan in 20 and 21. And now he tries for his first save in the major leagues. 6, 7, and 8 in the order. And Outman takes strike three, call. Splitter at the knees, and Outman is caught looking, and that's the first down in the bottom of the ninth. Strike three called. He got him looking at a slider. Reed Garrett with back-to-back strikeouts, and the Dodgers are down to their final out in the ninth.
What a pitch. Perfection by Garrett when he needed it most.
And now the Dodgers are down to their final strike. 0-2 coming from Garrett to Lux. He struck him out, and the ball game is over. Reed Garrett strikes out the side in the ninth for his first major league save. The Mets win their sixth in a row.
It's another edition of the Talking Mets Podcast here on this Sunday, April the 21st, 2024. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You can get me on X, Talking Mets No G, and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, whichever one you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com, No G. Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. You can get me on Instagram, TalkingMetsNoG. Don't forget the newsletter, Substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. And of course, I want to welcome in the good folks from the Fansided Podcasting Network for supporting this show. Welcome to another edition of the Talking Mets Podcast, coming to you right after the Mets end their three games in L.A. They move on to San Francisco. We talked about this last week, their first West Coast trip of the season. First test trip, really, to see where this team is at. A very solid 2 out of 3 in L.A., although we're coming to you after pretty much the worst game of the year, a 10-0 stinker. A lot to talk about, a lot of drama this weekend, a lot of highlights, a lot of interesting things to talk about, so we'll get into that. In a little bit, we'll talk about Shea Stadium. I had my first trip to Citi Field earlier this week. I was there on Monday for Jackie Robinson Day, had the privilege of sitting in the Clover seats behind home plate, thanks to a friend of the show. And I'll talk a little bit about what came to mind as I was, and I hadn't gone to Citi Field last year. I went to Citi Field for the first time since late 2022, and I was thinking about that, especially with the 60 years of Shea Stadium. And then to round out the show, just the smorgasbord of thoughts, lost another baseball legend this week, Whitey Herzog. Of course, Mets connection. Some thoughts about Jackie Robinson when I was at Jackie Robinson Day. And I'm sure other things will come up as we round out the show. A couple of programming notes, and if you're listening to this, you might have to go find it on replay. But in just a little bit, in about 2 hours, I'll be doing the Subway to Shea Giants-Mets preview show, live YouTube show that our good friend Anthony Rivera over at Subway to Shea does. I'm sure you'll be able to find that on YouTube. So go to @TalkingMetsNoG on X to go find it, and I'll probably put it over at the newsletter for everybody to see. So we'll figure that out a little bit. And I talked about this over on X, on Twitter, and I will be in the building. Not only did I go to the Mets Pirates game at Citi Field earlier this week, I will be in Tampa, and I'll be taking in the Friday and the Saturday games in Tampa in a couple of weeks. My first road trip with the Mets in a long time. And I mean a long time. I mean, the last time I saw the Mets on the road might be 2006 when I went to watch Pedro Martinez's return as a member of the Mets against the Red Sox. Mets got blown out that game. That was a fun. It was a fun. Fenway Park's always a fun experience. But it's been a long time, almost 20 years since I've been watching the Mets on the road. I'm trying to remember if there was another time I watched the Mets on the road. I don't think so. Oh no, there actually is. I'm wrong. Sorry. In 2014, you know, it's coming to me as, in 2014, I actually watched the Mets and the Nats, a late season meaningless game. The Mets played the Nats on the road, a Bartolo Colon start. The Mets got annihilated late in that season. But, you know, the year before they made their run to the World Series. So as I'm talking here, the cobwebs are being knocked out and away you go. But to start off, yesterday, beautiful Saturday. It started out not so great with the weather, but a beautiful springish type Saturday. And so many memories came back as I was watching sports, a great sports day here. And, you know, Mets, Dodgers, obviously everyone preparing, you know, the Rangers with a big game one win today, Knicks, Sixers later on, was flicking back and forth, at, you know, the early part of the Knicks, Sixers and back and forth to the Mets-Dodgers game. But as I'm watching the Mets-Dodgers and the drama that's that unfolded, what you heard on the intro coming in, and getting all in to the Knicks-Sixers. I mean, anybody who follows the show knows I'm a big Knicks fan, big NBA fan. That's where I'm just a fan there. You know, I get involved and I try to get in the weeds and learn and understand the game on a more granular level. But I put myself as part of independent media with baseball. So I try to look at the game as professionally as possible. And sometimes there's a certain amount of fandom that gets taken away from that. With basketball, I don't have that problem. With the Knicks, I don't have that problem. I'm just a fan. I'm a fan like everybody else. And I try to look at things with a little bit more context. But as I'm watching the drama unfold and the big shots being made down the stretch by Josh Hart and the energy at the Garden and going back and forth to the Mets in LA, I could not help but remember the late 90s, turn of the century, when the Knicks were making a run to the finals. They were still very relevant, and you had the, what I call the golden age of the Subway Series, when the Mets and the Yankees first started playing regular season games, and you had that wild Mets run in 99 and 2000 that nearly culminated in a championship. But I think back to days like Saturday, like yesterday, were very commonplace, where you'd be watching a Mets-Yankees Subway Series, or you would be, you know, flicking around to Knicks-Pacers, or a Knicks-Finals game while the Mets were, and I remember watching a Knicks-Finals game and then switching over to a game in which the Mets were playing the Blue Jays in an extra inning game, and Bobby Valentine comes out with a mustache, you know, and glasses. So a lot of old memories came up, and what it really showed me is that, like, that's what the fun side of sports is about. Now, results are not guaranteed. What made yesterday fun was the wins. The Mets having a great win against a really good team, despite the fact that they're struggling. The Dodgers are a good team on the road. Big performances, good managing by Carlos Mendoza. And the Knicks against a really tough Philadelphia 76ers team with one of the best players in the league on the other side in Joel Embiid, coming up with some big plays down the stretch in front of the home Garden crowd. A Garden crowd that has not had a lot of playoff moments the last 20 years. You know, not as many as the Rangers have had. And then you think about it, as the game ends and the Knicks have that big win and they're starting to interview people post-game, you see them tearing down the court right away the garden workers, because you got to get the ice ready for the Rangers in an afternoon game in less than 24 hours. So all the sports, what makes the weekends fun, which is really what this is all about for us and why we do this, why you listen to shows like this, why you consume all this different media, why you go to games, why you buy jerseys and all the things that you do. And I think over the last few years, and I don't want to make this because it's really going to be about the Mets and one of the first tests that we saw from them this weekend in LA and some of my thoughts on that. But I really wanted to accentuate, I think that there's been so much negativity that we focus in on with our sports teams. And that's going to happen. Look, there's going to be peaks and valleys in every season, and there's going to be plenty of things to get worried about, you know, with the Mets, with the Knicks, with the Rangers, you know, with their runs. And, you know, if you're not a Yankees fan if you're listening to this, but, you know, you throw the Yankees in there as well. That, you know, when you have a day like this, like you had over on Saturday, it just shows you, like, that's why we do this, to have fun. The results aren't guaranteed. The outcome is obviously not guaranteed. And there's a high percentage likelihood that you're going to be disappointed and angry and frustrated, and your whole day is ruined or your weekend is ruined. How many weekends has been ruined because of bad baseball? I mean, countless weekends have been ruined because of bad baseball, because we're frustrated, because we don't control the outcome, and we feel that things should be different. But it just really made me go back to a time, you know, my early 20s, just out of school, consuming sports, and it was so much fun, New York sports in that late 90s. You had the Giants going to the Super Bowl, the Jets, you know, unfortunately, they didn't, you know, go to the Super Bowl under Bill Parcells. You had the Knicks with their finals run, Mets and Yankees making runs, and obviously the Yankees with their dynasty. And that's what you need in this town. You know, nobody wants to spend day in and day out listening to talk radio or podcast or reading the news where it's some kind of gaslighting or trolling or beating proverbially a player with sticks, like what's been going on with Lindor. Like, that stuff, that'll happen. But, you know, why we do this is not for that. It's for days like Saturday, for the adrenaline you get when Diaz strikes out Muncy with the bases loaded, or a Josh Hart big three late in the game on Saturday night, or a big diving stop by Pete Alonso, or the story. You know, baseball always has a way of giving you these great stories, and look at what a great story, and ironically, I wrote about him over at Beyond the Mic. You know, Reed Garrett, what he's out of nowhere. I mean, a guy that all winter, even on this show, yours truly, were like, when are they just going to dump Reed Garrett and get themselves a veteran reliever to put on the 40-man roster? A good thing they didn't, especially now with Brooks Raley out. Garrett's going to become even more important to this team over the next couple of weeks. So just something that came to mind. Now, getting to the business at hand, which is the Mets and this weekend in L.A. Now, a really good outcome, not necessarily the greatest process. And you'll take it. And I think that what you've seen so far from this Mets team is, and it's a positive thing, nothing has really been going their way. Nothing's been perfect. I mean, when you start to break down, even with the 6-game winning streak that was snapped today, the starting pitching walks too many batters and doesn't go long into games. And the bullpen does walk its fair share. Now, they strike out a lot, but you haven't even seen vintage Diaz yet, who's a couple of ticks below his max out velocity. The defense hasn't been great. I mean, Joey Wendell did everything in his power to give away Friday night's game. And, you know, you haven't seen great defense all the time from guys like Marte and Nimmo. And you know, I guess I'll say this, Beatty's been a great revelation. I mean, Beatty's been outstanding at third base. I mean, night and day from a year ago. But the defense hasn't been exactly what the Mets have wanted. Even Lindor, who's a gold glover, hasn't been great. And nobody's really having a career year offensively yet. And nobody's having a career year out of the bullpen. Maybe Garrett, that's the only one. But they're finding ways to stay in ball games and win ball games and do the little things. Carlos Mendoza, you know the best part about Carlos Mendoza? Up until just a couple of days ago when Will Salmon wrote about Mendoza and some of the positives in terms of communication and managing his clubhouse, you didn't hear about him because there was no reason to talk about him. And sometimes with managers, especially in this town, that's a good thing, Because the more you talk about the manager one way or the other, that means they're too much of the focus. And Carlos Mendoza has just been doing his thing, and that's positive. So to take away a Mets team that is 12-9 after 21 games and was, is on pace for 93 wins right now. But if you want to take the season in 20-game increments, they were 12-8 through their first 20 games. And, when you look at that, you're seeing a team that right now, and it's all about math, it's about getting to that magic number of 88 wins. If you're an 85-win team, you have a good shot at being in the muck at the end of the year with the wild card. But if you're an 88 to 89 to 90-win team, you're not going to win a division unless the division really comes down to you, like the 2015 Mets. But you'll be in the mix and very likely have a high percentage chance of being one of those three wild cards. And I think that's where this Mets team has to focus on. Not all the noise around them, not the streak that the Phillies are on, not how good the Braves are. You know, the Dodgers are another team on another planet over there. They just need to focus on themselves and winning 2 out of 3 and 6 out of 10 and 11 out of 20. And guess what? If you do that pretty consistently throughout the season, 11 out of 20, that ain't sexy. That's barely over 500. But guess what? You do that over and over and over again, you win about 89 games. I mean, that's what baseball is. Baseball is not about the 1972 Lakers winning 30-something games in a row, or the LeBron James Miami Heat winning 30-something games in a row, or the New England Patriots trying to go for a perfect season against the Giants. I mean, those are winter sports. You know, that's the dominance of winter sports, home court advantage and crazy one-loss totals. Baseball is about incremental sands of time, and I think that's what this Mets team right now is showing you. If anything, it's been showing you some shades of 2022. Now, in 2022, you got great seasons at Lindor and Alonso and Marte and McNeil. And, you know, you had Scherzer and DeGrom and Bassett, and you had Diaz with that career year, and Ottavino, who was a revelation, who continues to actually this year pitch like even better because he hasn't walked a batter yet. Think about that. Better than he may have in 2022. But around those guys that had those big years, you had component players who did just enough, the Escobars and the Canas. I should have put Nimmo as a guy with a career year in the 2022 version. And you know, the Joely Rodriguez is coming out and getting big outs against the Braves when they need it. And so on and so forth. I mean, that, you know, Carrasco, Taiwan Walker, guys that didn't put up big numbers but did enough to be part of a winning formula. And you're starting to see some components of that, you know, here. And what I was starting to think about as I watched this dramatic win on Saturday afternoon was, and I still remember, and I can't remember exactly what day it was. It was early May of 2022. The Mets were down something like 7-1 to the Phillies. What I remember about that day is I was listening to the game. The Mets were getting blown out, and I got rear-ended on the highway in a hit-and-run. I was okay. Some of you might say, oh, well, darn, right? I was okay. The car was not great, but I was able to drive it home. And I had spent the whole night on the phone with the insurance company, the better part of the night, figuring out how to get my car to the body shop the next day, and really ticked off about the whole situation. And I had checked out of that game when it was like 7-1, whatever it may be. And I wound up later that night after I decompressed, done all my stuff, went on the MLB.com app, and I see they won 8-7. I'm like, oh my God. And that's the game where Diaz came in to get the save and Marte had the big hit and Lindor started off with a home run. And you were starting to see the beginnings of the 2022 Mets and who they could be. I believe it was the beginning of the end of Joe Girardi in Philadelphia, who would get fired not that much longer after that. And I think you saw a little bit of that this weekend. Now, look, the Dodgers are not hitting on all cylinders. And believe it or not, as I looked at them this weekend, I did not see the team that, if you go back a couple of years ago, what did they win, 110 games in 2022? I said, this is like the 96 Bulls of baseball. And I think when they put together Glasnow and Ohtani and Yamamoto, and, you know, you have the Betts, Freeman, Ohtani, Will Smith, part of that batting order, that was where a lot of people were going. And there's a lot of time for them to flex their muscles and become the team that that they may be. But you look up and down that lineup, it doesn't scare you outside of those top four. Now, that's a treacherous top four. And like you saw today, you mess around with the bottom of the order, and that bottom of the order gets going, and you can't get those guys out. You got a host of problems. That was what Adrian Hauser's issue was. Adrian Hauser was punished for the fact that the Dodgers left the bases loaded a billion times on Saturday. They didn't capitalize against Reed Garrett when Joey Wendell was flubbing the ball all over the ball field on Friday night. So that was coming. That was coming for the Mets. So you could say there was a little bit of luck, but when you start to look up and down the Mets roster, everybody's doing just enough. And believe it or not, I think this is an offense right now that couldn't hit the side of a barn the first week of the season at Citi Field, but is going into today's game, and that took a hit today with the shutout, was averaging over 5 runs a game. What did I say at the beginning of the year? A lineup with J.D. Martinez in it could potentially average 5 runs a game. Really, what you need, go back to the blueprint, which I've talked about, is 5 innings, 2 runs out of your starters. Some mix and match, and there's a good amount of depth, and I know that depth took a hit with Rayleigh going on the injured list for a couple of weeks, but it doesn't sound like it's too serious, and with the emergence of Garrett, they could probably withstand that a little bit better than they did just a couple of weeks ago. You know, managing the bridge appropriately, and then getting Diaz to be Diaz, which again, he was a little shaky yesterday, but when push comes to shove, that elite slider and elite fastball is going to be hard for most big leaguers to do anything of substance with. Really. I mean, do you want to face him in a big spot? I don't think anybody does. I don't care how good you are. One of the big stories, I think, here early is a guy that we all had pegged to be the next Robinson Cano, and that was Starling Marte, a guy who looked toasted pretty much since September 1st of 2022. And I believe, and it was because of his hand when he got hit by the pitch. I think it was Mitch Keller, I think, hit him with the pitch, if I'm not mistaken. But I think losing Marte for the amount of time they lost him in September hurt the Mets down the stretch. And I think a healthy Marte, who was performing the way he was throughout 2022, would have made the division situation a little bit different. Maybe a different situation going into the postseason. Last year, coming back off the double hernia surgery, looked like he was toast. Probably shouldn't have played. Probably should have been out the year, if you really think about it. And, he tried to play through it and wound up getting shut down right after the All-Star break. You know, now he's back. He seems healthy. And even though he didn't hit early, the positive signs were the guy is hitting the ball hard. And now you're starting to see the fruits of that labor. A bomb of a 3-run home run in game 2, the afternoon game in L.A. He continues to play well. He's playing fairly good defensively. And, Starling Marte at the top of the order. And you're going to assume that Nimmo and Pete and Lindor are going to get back to who they are. You know, that foursome. You know, maybe it's not Betts and Freeman and Ohtani, but it's a pretty good foursome. Now, you take a little bit of a hit, and he wasn't hitting with Alvarez now being out. And that's the thing about this Mets team when I say they're not perfect. Here they are. They've already got some thunderbolts. They got a little tiny thunderbolt with Rayleigh being out a couple of weeks. They got a little bit bigger thunderbolt. They're going to lose their catcher who gives them a lot on the defensive side. Now, no fear, Thomas Nito is here, and he's finally threw someone out. But Thomas Nito, even with Alvarez not hitting, that's still better than what you're going to get out of Nito. So the lineup is really starting to resemble a little bit of 2022 with the catching situation. And you have potentially J.D. Martinez coming back on Friday. Finally, you get to see his Mets debut. So you figure, they'll be able to navigate that and hopefully continue to average that 4.75 runs per game. The big difference right now, and I think the storm cloud you have right now, is the length that you're getting out of the starting pitching. Yes, you're getting, for the most part, 5 innings, 2-3 runs from those guys, but they're walking way too many batters. They're walking some of the most batters in baseball. We talked about this last April when the Mets had one of the worst staffs in baseball. One of the biggest reasons for that was the walks. Walks kill. You saw what happens with walks today against the Dodgers. So is this a harbinger of things to come? We'll see. You have to hope that they'll get them under control. Hauser has not been good. He's been one of the worst with the walks out there. So I don't know if it's something to do with the pitch selection, Is it an anomaly? I mean, this has been a problem for this team for a while. You know, you go up and down. Severino nearly 4 walks per 9. Quintana nearly 5 walks per 9. Manaea nearly 5 walks per 9. Buto 5 walks per 9. Hauser nearly 6 walks per 9 coming into today's ball game. You know, the thing about Quintana is that's significantly, and that's where there's some hope, that's double what he normally does in his career. He's not a guy that walks a lot of guys. Same thing with Severino. He's not a guy that walks that many guys. So you think that that'll come down a little bit with Quintana and Severino. Manaea, we'll see. You know, he's a revamped pitcher. You know, historically, though, he has not been a guy that walks this many batters. So everybody at a career-high walk rate, you're hoping that that comes down and away you go. So not perfect, this team, by any stretch of the imagination. Thunderbolts abound. Alvarez out. Rayleigh out. Guys not really finding their way yet. Yeah, Lindor is finally coming around, but he's been historically awful through the first couple of weeks of the season. Alonso's been okay. McNeil's starting to percolate a little bit. Nimmo, not the elite run creator since that series in Atlanta that you would have expected. Is it because he's trying to hit the ball and hit home runs? I don't know. Really, the offense has been saved by Harrison Bader, who would have thunk it, and Starling Marte. And I think I expect those guys to get back into who they are. And if Marte is the 120 OPS plus, the, you know, the 780 to 800 OPS guy that we saw in 2022, well, watch out. You had JD Martinez. Now, DJ Stewart's doing his best JD Martinez impression. I mean, here he is, you know, 430 on base, OPS plus of 186, OPS of over 1,000. I mean, this is Aaron Judge numbers. I mean, he's not going to sustain that. But at least you know, I mean, a guy like Martinez has a little bit of back issue. And even last year, the Dodgers needed some rest. Only played 113 games. You've got someone here that potentially could not be as big of a downgrade if you want to rest JD against a really tough righty that he doesn't hit, or just, you know, give him a blow a couple of days a week. I know he's the DH and he's not playing the field, but, you know, he is an older player. So when you're the Mets right now and you walk out of LA at 12-9 on a 93 win pace, you're walking the ballpark, the starting rotation. You are not getting length out of the starting rotation. Your closer is not even hitting his stride yet after taking a year off. None of your core offensive players are really even out of their normal numbers yet. You're getting some nice contributions from Beatty. You're getting some nice contributions from Bader. You know, Marte's more like Marte. But, you know, you're right now, you're getting carried by BJ Stewart, Harrison Bader, some defense on the Beatty side and some contributions on the Beatty side, and Starling Marte. And those are not the guys you're going to be relying on. Those are the component guys. Those are the guys around. Maybe I should even add Tyrone Taylor, who's been really good off the bench. You didn't really see much of him this weekend. So the fact that you're now 12-9, you completely overcame the 0-5 start, which that puts you in a little bit of a hole. You got to feel really good where they are. You do. And it is fair to dream, because teams that have big series and start to come together, because that's what it's about. The getting to know you phase is about teams coming together and us learning about clubs. And one of the things we're learning early, and it's too soon to put a rubber stamp and say this is who they are, but what we're learning is these guys know their role. They all try to stay within themselves and contribute and be the best version of themselves they can be. They do a lot of the little things to find ways to win. They handle adversity well. They had plenty of that this weekend. And the depth that this organization so far has shown, between the scrap heap signings, some of the pitchers they've had in the organization out of the bullpen, and the way that they've gone about their business this winter, maybe they don't have those sexy names like Betts and Ohtani and Freeman that they signed this offseason, but they had their own core stars they already had in place. But David Stearns has shown that these component guys that he either kept, like Garrett and DJ Stewart, or acquired, like Harrison Bader, so far have embraced their roles and, you know, done just exactly what you want. So it's really, really interesting where they're at. It's a team that's, I think, has the potential for Mets fans to fall a little bit in love with. We'll see. Again, it's very, very early. On to San Francisco, where they take on the Giants. And, you know, that's always a tough series. I know the Giants haven't started their season off well. It's a sleepy ballpark. It almost like the games with the Giants put the fans to sleep, not because they're at 10 o'clock at night, but just the environment. It's just this difficult ballpark that depresses offenses. Even when the Giants are not good, they always seem to play well at home. So it's going to be a tough matchup for the Mets, and and away you go. So interesting weekend in L.A., big moments that you heard. It's fair to dream. It's called L.A. Dreaming. Can we dream of a Mets team that's not just in the muck as a wild card team, but possibly a 90-win team? Can they be giving us shades of 2022? Little early to say that. And a lot of the underlying numbers from the results tell you, slow down. There's a lot of storm clouds here. Not just the injuries that are the Thunderbolts, but the walks and the lack of length, I think, from the starting rotation, to me, is the one thing that we've talked about since day one that they've been able to mitigate, because these are things that could blow up a season. And now the question is, because historically some of these guys in that rotation don't walk that many batters, and you would have to think that Quintana and Severino and even Manaea should be able to give you more length and, you know, be able to give you better performances, pitches 91 to 110, perhaps, that this is not going to last. And then when some of the other things even out, DJ Stewart's not going to be who he is. I don't see Harrison Bader being a 300 hitter and things like that. So anyway, that's where you're at. Fun weekend. Definitely a lot to get excited about, whether you're a Mets fan, a New York Hockey Rangers fan, a Knicks fan. This is why we watch sports. This is some of the most fun times of the year, when you have the beginning of the baseball season, the NHL playoffs, the NBA playoffs. It's like big sports moment after big sports moment, night after night after night. Get you away from reality, get you away from the nonsense that's going on either in you're at work or the world at hand. And that's what we need sports to be. We need sports to be a respite from stupidity, not adding to the drama and the agita and the stupidity that we encounter each and every day. All right, let's take a quick break. When we return, I was in the building this past Monday, Citi Field, Jackie Robinson Day, got a chance to see a great Mets win. But listening to everybody talk about Shea Stadium, the 60th anniversary of the first game at Shea, and then thinking about Shea and looking at what Citi Field is and looking at some of the poor attendance numbers, I wrote over at Beyond the Mic a little thought about missing Shea and some of my concerns about Citi Field. Normally, I don't like to bring a Beyond the Mic piece to the podcast because I feel like that's separate. Like that's, I'm diving into topics that are not as podcast-centric. But I wanted to go a little bit deeper into that and give you my thoughts about Shea, give you my thoughts about the attendance at Citi Field, and potentially a concerning trend where Citi Field might be a tough home field advantage, and it might be a better home field advantage if you have a smaller crowd. Maybe a little wild theory, but let's take a quick break. We'll be back with more right after this.